Ladies and gentlemen, welcome.
God, I didn't even say anything that time. You have problems.
You know what I was
saying? You know what? You know what? Here's what we're going to do. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 10 of the Team Rocket Podcast. I apologize. Jesse is, well, brain dead as usual.
You know what?
What?
It was your job to say something right at the countdown.
And you didn't do a countdown.
Yeah,
that's your fault.
Yeah, I did.
No, you didn't.
I did one from
did
10.
Not. Bruh. No. Bruh. No.
God,
knock, knock.
Ladies and
knock,
gentlemen,
knock.
Welcome to the Team Rocket Podcast. I'm Jesse. This is James, who's being a scrub lord today.
Shut up,
welcome to our 10th episode, even though we've had a bit of a hiatus and we've been pretty... God, it took us this long to finally make episode 10. We are sad.
Okay, but I promise that like from now on, we'll do one. We'll do like two a month.
At least two a month. We'll try for one a week, but at least two a month. That's the goal.
Yeah, if Jesse isn't a pleb.
Watch us screw this up. Is pleb your new insult today? Is that what you're going with?
It's better than dog rapist.
Oh, my God.
That's your go-to thing. Question. Quick question for you.
Yes, fire away.
Dwarf or Draenei? Just answer the question.
Dwarf or Draenei?
Dwarf or Draenei?
Self-euthanization.
I thought about that, too, but if it's self-euthanization, that's not the same thing. Anyway, so, we got a lot of good stuff to talk about, a lot of weird stuff to talk about.
Yeah. First, I do want to say this because James and I are wrestling fans. Our deepest condolences to the family of Roddy Piper, who passed away recently at age 61.
That's not even that old. That's sad.
For wrestlers, no, that is...
Was it complications of his cancer, or did they said yet?
I want to say it was... I want to say it was heart failure, but I'm not entirely sure on that. I don't want to make that kind of comment because I honestly don't know.
I know. I was just wondering because like he was having the issues with throat cancer a couple of years ago. That's I was like maybe that's what it was.
I mean, I do know to the wrestling world that's a great that was just that sucks.
Yeah, that does suck.
I mean, first we have to deal with Hogan being a racist, and then Roddy Piper has to die. This is bullshit, by the way. I want to point.
That's really, beyond bullshit.
Roddy Piper, really.
Yeah.
You had to take Piper from us. First you took Dusty, now you took Piper.
Yeah. Too soon.
All I know is look, Heaven's got the best wrestling card going right now. That's all I can say to that.
Hogan. I had to catch myself. Never mind. I was like, Hogan better put him over. I was like, wait, Hogan's not the one that died. Never mind.
You know what? Piper and Dusty, God, that would be a battle on the mic up there.
Yeah.
Truly the greatest show in all of eternity.
Oh my God. Yeah. So, yeah, that's so crazy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Speaking of another rowdy one, though, Ronda Rousey last night
at UFC 190. Korea.
You know what?
Oh,
no,
my God.
No, you know what? I think she's slipping. It took her 30-some-odd seconds to win this fight.
No, I watched the fight.
No, she's slipping. The fight wasn't over in 14 seconds.
No. Have you seen the fight? I have. She ate so many punches just to hit her in the face. I was like almost certain she was going to get herself knocked out at one point. I was like, this is going to be how she loses. She finally has got to a point where she's just so mad, she's going to walk into a punch and get knocked out.
The thing is, it didn't even look like Corriera's striking was really having that much of an effect on her. And I mean, once Corriera tripped into that back somersault, Rousey was like, nope.
Yep. It was one and done. Good job, Ronda. Good job.
I mean, that's a nice faceplant knockout. That was just.
Oh, my God. That was amazing. That couldn't have been any better. That was,
you know what? That's karma. I'm so.
Oh yeah, Corriera talked so much shit about her dad and a bunch of other stuff.
What it was, Corriera made that awful comment that if when she beats Rousey, she would give Rousey an immediate rematch so that you know Rousey wouldn't have to cry, and hope that Rousey wouldn't kill herself. According to Corriera, she did not know, however, that Rousey's father had in fact committed suicide when she was younger, which is still a very obvious sore spot for Rousey.
How could you not know that about Ronda Rousey? That's like one of the things that like everybody knows.
I mean, she wrote a book and this is brought up in the book. And the book came out before Corriera made these comments.
Yeah, there's like no excuse. I mean, even if you didn't read the books, like if you've seen ESPN special on her, if you saw her special on her that Showtime did in Strikeforce,
yeah.
Any of that stuff, you would know right from the get that her father committed suicide. You should know that.
Yeah, and for Corriera to just say, it was so stupid. What were you thinking? And then, you know, Ronda calls her. Hey, Ronda, you know, when she found out on Twitter, it wasn't, you know, one of those, you know, I'm going to F you up. She was like, my father killed himself. I don't joke about that. Suicide is not a joke. I'm going to make you pay for that. And Corriere starts apologizing. Like, I did not know. I did not. Yeah, you did. Shut up. Look, if you're number one, if you're going to troll, own your troll.
Yeah. Especially when your troll goes too far. You should definitely own up to that.
It's like, have you all not learned from Chael Sonnen yet?
No.
You know, look, first off, if you're not willing to go too far, you're not willing to go far enough. You can make that argument.
Yeah.
At least if you're going to play a villain, you might as well be willing to go too far.
Yeah.
Something Roddy Piper was willing to do several times, I might add.
Yeah. But at the same time, why would you do that to Ronda of all people?
Oh my god, I think the weigh-in was just Corriere is like up in Ronda's face, like mean mugging, yelling. Like I didn't know her, like just jawing at her. And I'm thinking, Ronda Rousey looks like she's going to tear your head off. She looks like she wants to kill you.
I wish there was a Ronda's going to kill you chant.
No, it wouldn't have happened. So then the fight happens. And I mean, again, Ronda Rousey ends another fight in under a minute, this time by knockout, which...
I did not see that coming at all. I thought she was going to, like, snap her arm. Like, I was like, she's going to make her, like, suffer.
No, I mean, she beat Correa where a lot of people thought Correa would be strongest in a brawl situation. And, again, faceplant knockout. You cannot get more definitive than that.
Nope.
Correa is now at the back of the line. Her title hopes are dashed. Now it's probably Misha Tate for the third time.
But Misha Tate is... Shut up, pleb. Misha Tate actually deserves, like we kind of talked about last night during our drunken segment hanging out, that, and I brought it up, like Misha is in this weird position where she can clear the entire division too, but she will always be number two. She will always be like Vegeta to Rousey's Goku. She will never be able to beat her. And in the event that she does beat her, she'll beat her one time, Ronda will come back and just decimate her.
I mean,
that's how I see it happening, which is sad.
I mean, it's... Oh God, what was... Who was one of Sugar Ray Robinson's rivals that he fought consistently? Like, they fought like 20 times, and he lost to the guy like 5 times. But the fact is, he did lose to this guy occasionally. It was,
I don't know.
Wasn't Rocky Marciano. I know Marciano was retired undefeated.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. There's a bunch of good boxers around that time, too.
Yeah.
But anyway, the whole point is, that's the straight up the only analogy I can think of that works with those two is, she's Vegeta, Rousey is Goku. No matter how hard she trains or tries or does anything, doesn't matter. She beats everybody else. Doesn't matter if she saves the day. She will never be able to beat her.
It's just, this is one of those fights I have no interest in seeing because I've already seen how this fight ends. At least with Correa, you get the illusion that it's a new opponent. This one might have something new. She might be able to make it past the 30-second mark.
Maybe. Possibly.
You know what? At this point, you need to start... I think they need to start... Vegas odds just need to start doing it over-under. Will the fight go over 30 seconds? Like, really? I really think you could make a serious bet for that.
I mean, you could.
Yeah.
I still think it's hilarious that... Man, she just got Shrek'd. She was like, I'm gonna trade. Like, I literally thought that Ronda was gonna, like, get herself knocked out. Like, I was watching her get hit. She literally got hit, like, 12 times in a row, just straight to the face. It was touch and go for a second. Or at least in my opinion, it was kind of touch and go for a second. So I realized that Ronda was just waiting to knock her out.
I mean, the truth is, Ronda has no fear. She's not afraid. She walks the octagon like she owns it. Yeah. And I mean, that's really the best mentality to have. So, I mean, props to her for another win. She literally, you know what? There was a tweet that popped up. It was from Ski Sonic, the fighting game community personality. And it said, Ronda must really be supporting Summer Games Done Quicks. She must really be supporting Pokemon for that because she just did a speed run of Beth Corriere's career.
Pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And it was, I was like, damn, 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10.
I mean, that's like a Drake diss tape on Meek Mill.
Meek Mill. Anyway, that's another episode for another time.
Another time. I don't want to give Meek Mill any more attention than he already has.
He has too much as it is. Way too much. Anyway.
He's getting more... He has already gotten more attention than anyone should get for fucking Nicki Minaj. Oh, and there's... What was that, F-bomb number one?
Number one. Wow. I have to say, we made it pretty far.
Yeah, well done to us. All right, so since this is supposed to be a video game podcast, and we have decidedly been skimping on video games for at least the past 10 minutes now, a couple weekends ago, I went to Las Vegas for the Evolution Fighting Game Championships for the second year in a row. And this year, Evo did not disappoint. It was fun as it was last year. Let me talk about my experiences viewing Top 8 on Sunday. Yeah. And we're going to start with the Guilty Gear Xrd Finals, the Top 8 for that. Mm-hmm. Oh my god, Woshige. For those of you that do not know about the Woshige moment, here's what happened. In Top 8... a gentleman by the name of Woshige took on one of the gods of Guilty Gear, Ogawazato.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a best 2 of 3. So, if I'm not mistaken, Ogawazato took the first match, Woshige took the second. So they're going into the third match, Ogawazato wins the first round. Woshige, and if you've seen the clip, you've seen it on ESPN, but to sum it up, basically Woshige wins the second round and gets up and starts celebrating, not realizing that he's going into the third round. So as soon as he realizes, he runs back to his controller, but it is too late. Ogawazato basically does the equivalent of punching him in the mouth over and over again into a perfect, and basically wins the match and eventually goes on to win first place. Woshige would actually get third in the entire tournament.
What a dummy.
The funny thing is, like, everyone is... I was in the live crowd for that. I was actually in the tournament hall viewing that, and that was the one tournament that I viewed live in the tournament hall. And I almost regret it because of the commentary or the commentator that they had for Guilty Gear, Hell Pockets, is one of the most underrated commentators in the FGC. He was the original King of Fighters 13 commentator. He's basically the guy that made that game hype.
Gotcha.
And the reason he was not around last year for the King of Fighters 13 Top 8 on Saturday was because during the previous year's Top 8, he inadvertently dropped an F-bomb in his excitement.
Wait, they kicked him out for that?
He got banned from the commentary for the next year because of that, yes.
That's some bullshit.
Well, because of that, they brought in two commentators who knew their technical aspect or the technical side of the game, but they could not bring the hype, so it basically made the game dry to watch. There was just nothing worth watching.
Oh, geez, I'm so sorry. I cannot mute the mic that or fast enough.
Unfortunately, sneezing is one of those things we have yet to beat. Sorry, guys.
Oh, God.
So, I mean, seeing it live, and I mean, I was in a crowd. There was a guy behind me that was literally doing side bets on what was going on stage. And it was intense. I think I participated in the very end. The first time I lost that side bet, I thought that Ogawazato would drop at least the set and his opponent in grand finals would reset the bracket, but it did not happen. I lost $5 for that. Son of a bitch.
Yeah, learn how to bet.
Yeah, I know. But I will tell you this. After that happened to Woshige, everyone wanted a Woshige-Ogawazato run back.
Really?
Everyone. Woshige basically became the darling of that top eight.
Hmm.
Like, everyone was cheering for him, chanting his name. People, I think, cheered harder for him than they did the one American representative in Top 8, Zidane.
Wow, that's great.
Now, grant you, though, an American in any of the Japanese Air Dash fighting games, you are not the favorite, you're the decided underdog, and you're probably not making it past 7th place. But good job getting to Top 8 all the same.
Yeah.
I really feel that's demeaning, and I really...
It's true, though. That's the sad part.
I mean, unfortunately, when it comes to the anime-style air dashers, the Japanese, they have it on lock.
Yeah, the corner of that market.
And really, the best... I think it was Blaze Blue last year. The best an American representative did was 7th place. So, I mean, this is...
Seriously?
Yeah, but the fact is, we now have there are Americans that are breaking top 8 against a heavily stacked Japanese field. So, I mean...
And that is something. Yeah. That really is something.
Yeah. So, I mean, there is... You know, they're doing better. We're getting better at it. But no, Woshige ended up becoming like the big favorite, and as a result, became probably the most talked about thing, not just in Evo, not even in just in the FGC in general, but literally got on SportsCenter. ESPN covered that because of what he did. Why are you standing up for Woshige? Why? Bruh.
Yeah, you ain't even done yet. What are you doing?
Sit your ass down, Woshige. What? No!
Yeah. Defeat snagged from the jaws of victory.
Oh my god, it was. And I mean, like you want to feel bad for Woshige?
But you really can't.
You can't. It's like
you knew what was going to happen as soon as you did that.
It's like, what were you thinking getting up? Why?
Karma. Yep. I mean, straight up karma.
Oh my god. The next tournament after that, for that Sunday, was Mortal Kombat 10.
And which you despise, so let me guess, you're paying attention, right?
Actually, no, I did watch it. I do despise the game, but I did watch it.
Pause. We got to pause right here. And this, I swear I'm not going to troll you. Could you explain why you do not like Mortal Kombat?
I find the violence aspect of it to be incredibly gimmicky. The gameplay feels stiff, and that seems to be a trademark with all NetherRealm's fighters. The last one I played was Injustice, and that had the same stiff feeling to it. I'll put it this way. The storylines in those games are usually pretty well done. They have one Injustice, from at least from what I recall, had one of the best story modes I've ever seen in a fighting game.
Yeah.
Certainly better than it deserved.
Yeah.
But I'm not a fan of NetherRealms in general. I never have been, I never will be. It's okay. Something about their style doesn't mesh with me. However, I did watch finals, and as expected, Sonic Fox ended up winning the tournament. Coming from loser's bracket, though. Sonic Fox, someone knocked Sonic Fox into losers, and Sonic Fox had to make the loser's bracket run to get his first place victory. But he did it. The 17-year-old furry from Texas did it.
Like, you had a point that he's a furry.
He is a furry.
I know, but also you should preface it to Jesse does not like furries.
You know what? I think it's perfectly appropriate that the best NetherRealms fighting game player right now is a furry. I think that's perfectly appropriate.
Nah, and I know who's hating.
I am hating.
The real reason.
No, I'll tell you what though. No, that kid has made bad. Between that and I think it was the ESL Mortal Kombat League tournament where he won like 60K off that tournament.
Yeah.
Dude, Sonic Fox has made bank off that game. Literally in like a month or a 2 months period of time, I'm pretty sure that's 100K plus that he made.
That's insane.
Yeah. So yeah, Sonic Fox has made bank. Look, regardless of any shit I may talk about NetherRealms, regardless of what shit I can say about Sonic Fox being a furry, the kid made his money.
Yeah, he more than made his money.
Oh, yeah. I have never seen that much money in my lifetime. And probably never will, knowing my luck. But
don't say that. You can get a job as like a computer programmer with Thomas, but
Now we're going into our personal life. That's
I actually was gonna make a joke about something, but never mind. I love you like a brother.
What I'm saying,
a robot brother.
You know, I can sit here and hate, but it's very salt. I mean, shit. As much as look, I hate NetherRealms, but if you told me that if I picked up this game, you know, I would have a natural knack at it and become the best ever and win $100,000. Yeah, I would. For $100,000, I would shut up and probably play the game too.
I mean, you have no reason to. It's easy. It's free money. You take something you're already talented at after you pick it up and you just make money off of it. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, and you know what he's doing? And who am I to question him? He's doing what he loves. He gets to play video games and competitively, and he makes money for it. And that's not like he's splitting that money with anyone. That money's his.
Exactly. That's the other thing. That's his money.
Yeah, I mean, at 17 years of age, if you could tell me here at 17 you can make $100,000 doing this, who wouldn't? Yeah. So I mean, the kid's dominant. He's very good. His Aaron Black and his katana are ridiculous.
I mean, I really like what they've done with it recently, except for a couple of things. But
I was gonna say though, his losers finals match was the most competitive match I think he had, bar none. Like, I think it was like really back and forth. Like, he had to really work for that one.
Yeah, because it was losers. If he lost there, he was
done.
Well, I mean,
it wasn't just that. Like, his opponent in losers finals put up a fucking... I think it was actually the guy who put him in losers to begin with.
I'm just saying, like, you usually see the best competitions out of losers finals, because if you lose there, you're done. And if you win, you get to go on and get another shot. So that's usually like any tournament I've seen, not even fighting game tournaments, basketball tournaments, anything like that. If you get, there's a loser's bracket, people usually put on the best for that. And they kind of play smart for the real turn or the real championship.
I mean, but then they got to win twice too on a reset. I mean, you're going into a certain degree of bracketology, and that's Sonic. But regardless, hats off to Sonic Fox or furs off, ears off, whatever is whatever's the furry equivalent for hats off is. I don't know. The next tournament after that was Smash Melee.
Nobody cares about that game.
Well, a lot.
Shut up. Nobody cares about it.
It had the third highest entry rate at Evo, behind Smash Wii U and Street Fighter 4.
Okay, I have to preface this with what Jesse just said about NetherRealm's games. I personally do not believe that that game should be in a tournament scene at all. Hands down, no questions asked. You know why, Jesse?
Why's that?
Smash is one of the games that like I could actually play with people that have skilled the game and know the counters, know the final smashes, but I played against like some kids that had no clue what they're doing, and they freaking wrecked me and other people that know how to play it.
Now, you realize you're talking about Brawl and not Melee, right?
No, I was playing... Which one was on the Wii?
That would be Brawl. Melee was on the GameCube.
Oh, yeah, you're right. But still, at any rate, I hate that game just because of the one on the Wii. It ruined it for me. I'm so salt. It literally ruined it.
I mean, that game really... That game is actually probably the reason that Smash Melee still has the scene that it does.
You can literally derp down the...
So what I will say, for the past 2 years prior at Evo, Melee had been won by Joseph Mango Marquez from Team Cloud9.
Mango.
And this year he was going for the three-vo, the three-peat. But he was having to do it from loser's bracket, which was a big deal. Because again, it was another loser's bracket run. And at the fifth place match, he encountered his old rival and nemesis, Hungrybox. And one of the best comparisons I've ever seen between the two is the tennis comparison between Andy Roddick and Roger Federer.
And for us Americans that don't like tennis, it's two white guys that hit the ball really well.
Yeah. Here's the thing, the analogy I'm about to make. Federer is like Mango, and Hungrybox would be like Roddick. Federer beat the shit out of Roddick on a head-to-head. Like, we're talking, I want to say the record was like 27-3. And it wasn't
27-3?
Like, yeah.
Okay.
Roddick got his ass throttled. It wasn't like Roddick was a scrubby player. Roddick was very good. Roddick had a U.S. Open Grand Slam under his belt. In fact, had Federer never come along, Roddick would probably have at least 5 or 6 more Grand Slams under his belt. Unfortunately.
Dang, harsh.
Unfortunately, Roddick has a lot of runner-ups. Several, like, I think 3 Wimbledon runner-ups alone, just because of Federer. But at the tail end of Roddick's career, right before he retired, one of the last people he played, I think it was in one of their Masters Series tournaments, was Federer. And he finally beat Federer. That's how he got win number 3.
Dang. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, and such was a similar storyline going into this Evo match. Mango has always had Hungrybox's number, and the two have had a storied dislike with each other.
Yeah.
And yet, in fact, last year during Melee, Hungrybox has been perennial top 3 at every Melee, at the past 3 Melee tournaments at Evo.
Yeah.
He got 3rd place in 2013, and he got 2nd place at 2014 last year. And the person who has always eliminated him has been Mango.
That's like a built-in rivalry.
And that's just that alone. That's not counting their other matches throughout time immemorial throughout Smash. Well, this time, Hungrybox finally got his elusive 3rd win. He basically played what would have been considered a really lame ledge stalling tactic with his Jigglypuff. But in their 3rd match, he baited Mango into suiciding twice. And basically built himself enough of a lead and played cautiously enough that... I mean, he beat Mango. He stopped the 3-vo. It was no one saw it coming. he just...
I don't think anybody would have.
Oh, man, and Mango was not happy about it afterwards. It was so bad that during the award ceremony, Mango took his fifth place medal and threw it into the crowd. To that man, it's either you're either first or you're last. There's no distinction. That is literally what it is. If you're that hyper competitive, that's how you look at it. If you're not first, you're last.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's the competitive spirit at work there. Evo would go, or Melee would actually go on to be won by Sweden's Armada, who would get his first Evo title, beating Hungrybox in Grand Finals. So Hungrybox has another second place medal under his ledger, but you know has the distinction that he has been top three at Evo again for the past 3 years. Unfortunately, the big thing is, apparently, Hungrybox may be really retiring from active Smash playing at this point, I believe. He got an engineering degree and has a nice job lined up, and, you know, it is what it is. You know, he seems like a cool guy. I wish him the best. I think the Smash community is kind of lesser without him.
Yeah.
He is one of the five gods for that reason. But, you know, real life is real life. And, you know, he's got a good job. I say make that money.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly. Yep. So, all right. So, tell everybody about the game that everybody cares
hold
about.
Hold on. I am not done talking about Evo. We're not there yet. We've got two.
No, I mean the game that everybody wants to hear about at Evo.
Oh, you mean Marvel?
Yeah.
Oh, God. The Marvel Top 8. Quite possibly the most internationally stacked Top 8 I've ever seen for Marvel. Marvel has been largely regarded as the U.S.'s game. It is America's game. That is the game that we are guaranteed to take the championship in, and we did not. I think there were all of, I want to say, two or three American... Oh, God, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. I want to say there were two or three Americans in the Evo Top 8 for Marvel.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Damn.
Like, okay, let's consider this. The three, quote-unquote, gods of Marvel 3, Justin Wong, Chris G, Filipino Champ, all got eliminated before Top 8. This was actually big because prior to the tournament, Justin Wong put up a bounty on all three of them. Or all three of them, himself included, that if you can eliminate us from the tournament, I think it was like a $1,000 bounty or something.
Dang.
Like, it was either 500 or 1,000. It was reasonable enough money. Enough money to make that elimination worthwhile.
Yeah, that's still kind of crazy.
Let me think. I know that Clockwork claimed the Filipino champ bounty. and a Japanese player claimed the bounty on Chris G, beating Chris G with his own team. The team that Chris G made legendary, the Mora Doom with Virgil.
Yeah.
This Japanese player used on him and beat him with.
Dang. Good Shrek nerd.
Yeah.
I wonder how pissed he was about that.
Oh my God. I mean, that's the kind of loss that stings. You live with that one. Yeah, it was three Americans, by the way. Or, no, shit. I'm never going to get this right. Fuck it. I'm so mad.
Number two.
But anyway, what ends up happening, Marvel ends up being won by Chilean player Kane Blue River, who uses the big body team of Hulk, Sentinel, and Hagar.
Hmm.
This was a big deal because this is not a team you normally... First off, he's really the only one that uses that team. I mean, that's him.
Yeah.
And it's really not a... it's not a team you see in real active competition outside of him. Pardon me. A lot of times you're going to see, you know, Virgil. Virgil's practically a mainstay. You're going to see Dr. Doom. That's a mainstay. Or Zero.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have the Zero May Cry team, which is Zero, Virgil, and Dante.
Yeah.
Or, you know... Doom, Virgil. This is probably one of the most varied top eights I've seen, not just in nationality, but in team compositions. Kane Blue River, who ends up winning, had Hulk, Sentinel, and Hagar. Apology Man, one of the three Americans that were in top eight, played a Firebrand, Dr. Doom, Super Skrull team. So there's Doom, but Firebrand and Super Skrull you really don't see. And that particular team composition actually, when executed correctly, leads to basically an unblockable sequence that if he touches you once, you're dead.
Really?
I mean, you might as well just stop the match right there, pause the game, go right to next match, because it's that bullet. Really, it's all based on his execution. Fourth place, Cesar de Garcia from Mexico, Fruitsy, who has been in top eight in Marvel before, plays MODOK, Captain America, Dr. Doom. MODOK and Captain America, you never see in top eight, ever.
I mean, it could be done. Remember when Rocket Raccoon was a thing for a while?
Rocket Raccoon was a thing for one player, and that was Kusoru.
Yeah, for the traps.
Who at final round, I think, a couple years back, made an outstanding run with that.
Yeah.
Actually, the more I'm looking at this, the bottom section of top eight, fifth and seventh place, consisted mostly of the usual Dr. Doom Virgil bullshit. You had Golden Boy Neo, a Marvel 2 god, or not really a god. I can't just call him a god. It's not fair, but he was definitely... He won, I think, pretty much every high-stakes money match he played in Marvel 2.
Yeah.
He ended up getting fifth place in Marvel 3 with a Magneto, Dr. Doom, Phoenix composition. And Magneto's pretty good, or is pretty top-tier. Dr. Doom is very top-tier. Phoenix, if she hits Dark Phoenix, is ridiculous. And that's the gimmick with that team. You get them to level 5 and you wait. You use Phoenix as your anchor.
Yeah.
There were two Japanese players in... Actually, by the way, here was the nationality composition. You had three Americans, Neo, Apology Man, and Ray Ray.
Mm-hmm.
You had one Chilean, came Blue River. You had two Mexicans, Fruitsy and Dizzy. And you had two Japanese players, Cross and RF. In a game that has been largely American, that was pretty cool. And a big deal about that is, for the first time in Marvel history, an American didn't win. Since Americans didn't, or Americans had Marvel 2 on lock, so for a non-American to win Marvel at Evo, this is huge. After he won, Kane Blue River got on stage and did a speech to the crowd basically saying, Marvel is not America's game, but it's not Chile's game, it's not Japan's game or Mexico's, it's everybody's game. And basically making a plea that Marvel lives. And if you put in the effort, you put in the time, and you play the game, you know, the game will never die. And he's largely correct on that. What was actually funny is the amount of salt that came after Kane Blue River won. People were getting... High-level players were getting on Twitter basically claiming Marvel was dead.
Really? They took it that far?
Yeah, because, and even when he was playing Ray Ray in Grand Finals, they're like, come on, Ray Ray, win it for real Marvel. Which makes me ask, what is real Marvel?
American Marvel.
I guess what America believes it should be winning real Marvel. I mean, the counter-argument you can make there, though, it's like, look, there were statements like, well, the gods aren't in top eight, so what's the point? The gods could have been in top eight.
Played better.
You know, if they played up to their designation, yeah, frankly. Look, if you're mad because you think Kane Blue River scrubbed his way to an Evo win, number one, that really tells you that the game is scrubby as fuck anyway. That's number three.
Yeah.
And number two, you all let that happen. To get into top eight, Kane Blue River had to beat Justin Wong. He had to knock Justin Wong into losers. So he had to beat the previous EVO's champion to do it. So it wasn't like, you know, he was beating just Scrub Lords and got an easy road. At some point, someone could have stopped Kane Blue River from getting there, and no one did.
Yeah.
Kane Blue River won that through winners. He didn't lose a match. Or he didn't lose, you know, a set. What does that tell you?
That everybody's just super salty.
Oh, the salt was real and it was great. It was tasty. It was like right out of the Morton salt mine. Oh my god. And finally, finally, we have Ultra Street Fighter 4, which this may be its last year if Street Fighter 5 manages to make its manages to come out next year.
I doubt that.
Probably not. But you had the two Americans in PR Balrog and Knuckle Doo both lose in loser's bracket, so they both play seventh.
Mm-hmm.
Funny enough, but top three was apparently one of the best Street Fighter 4 or top threes ever. You had third place Infiltration and second place Gamer B facing off in loser's finals, and what was just basically a really ridiculous set across the board. And then you had Gamer B unfortunately losing to Momochi, who's been playing strong pretty much for the past calendar year since Capcom Cup, really. I mean, Momochi's just been playing off tilt.
That's a good thing, though, if he's playing that good. Yeah. That well.
Another thing with, like, Infiltration throughout the entire tournament, the man literally used 8 different characters. Evil Ryu, Elena, yeah. Chun-Li, DeCapre, Abel, Juri, Akuma, and Ryu.
Hmm.
Funny enough, in top three, Momochi, Gamerbee, and Infiltration all at some point used Elena. Elena's the one common denominator between all three of those players. Elena has basically become this...
She's a broken I win button almost.
She's not a broken I win button, but her healing ultra. Number one, that healing ultra could basically timer scams the fuck out of people.
Broken I win. I mean, for real. I don't know if any other way to put it, but that might just be salt, but it's dumb. It's so dumb.
But I mean, but you know what? It's in the game. And everyone knows it's in the game. And I mean, if it were truly broken, everyone and their mom would be learning and playing Elena. You would see Elena, 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 Elena if she was that super strong.
I think nobody wants to learn her. I mean, there's times where no one... What?
I am not good at Ultra Street Fighter 4, but I've played Elena. I like Elena. I like the way she plays. I like her goofiness. She's a fun character. I actually will say that. She's very fun to play.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm glad that she's getting the top-tier representation that she's getting, so I'm not gonna bash on her. I'm glad she was in top 8. I'm glad that, you know, good players are using her. Yeah. I'm glad that she's become a viable counterpick option for a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, as long as there's like more viability in characters, but like you said, some of the tactics are kind of goofy.
When you think about it, she's apparently good enough that people are willing to bank their money on her because she's delivering results at least at some point or another. So anyway, during Evo there was a game that was advertised, and if I'm not mistaken, it's being developed by two of the guys behind Evo, the Cannon brothers, and Seth Killian, a former community manager for Capcom for Street Fighter, is involved as well. And it's a fighting game called Rising Thunder.
Mm-hmm.
And they were showing trailers for it during top 8 at various intervals during intermissions. And it's basically a robot fighting game, effectively. 2D fighter, 3D, 2.5D would be the best way of wording it.
It's basically a Street Fighter 4 style engine. 3D fighters, 2D plane.
Yeah. But the premise is it's robots. Now, I love fighting robots. One of my favorite fighting games of all time was One Must Fall 2097 that was on PC. That I think is one of the more underrated fighting games to ever come out. I think it actually had a tournament mode where you could upgrade your robot a bit, and that's a story for another time. That game really encompassed a large part of my childhood, though.
Yeah, the nostalgia's hard, bro.
Oh, the nostalgia's super hard. I could still go back and play the game. Regardless, Rising Thunder was a game they were hyping up, and they were telling people, hey, come to our website, register, and you know register for a chance to play in the technical alpha. Well, I myself got a technical alpha invitation that I decided to check out, and I've got to tell you, this game has a lot of potential. Like, there is it has 6 active characters right now. You know, the interface itself at the moment is very bare bones. Here is the gimmick behind this fighter. one of the main things that I've heard a lot of people say with fighting games that it makes it very hard for them to get into are the special move inputs. Doing stuff like quarter circle punch for fireball, or, you know, Z motion on a joystick and a punch for dragon punch, stuff like that. Most people don't like trying to remember or trying to put in these inputs, as it makes... They feel that it's difficult to do. And unless you've been doing it for years, unless you're familiar with this kind of thing, it's going to be something that throws you off. Rising Thunder does away with that by putting all of the special moves on just a one-button press. And each special move now has a cooldown timer on it instead. So, number one, the idea is you can't blatantly abuse the same move over and over again. At least in theory, because you're going to see a cooldown timer, which is basically the effective equivalent to a recovery animations. But it basically means now you don't have to worry about trying to remember how to do these inputs. You can just play the game. You have your three normal attack buttons, light, medium, heavy, and you have a throw button. You have your three special buttons, 1, 2, and 3, and then you have an overdrive button, which is the equivalent to a super move that basically does an F ton of damage, but you have to build up meter for it.
Yeah.
And I've got to tell you, this game is really good.
It's probably my favorite fighting game to come out in a long time.
And the fact that it's only a technical alpha and it already shows this kind of promise, you know, is really good. Grant you, there are character balance issues right now. For example, there is a character in the game named Shell, who is basically the equivalent of Ryu and Ken. For all intents and purposes, is the Mexican robot equivalent of Ryu and Ken.
More or less, yeah.
You know, she has a fireball, a dragon or a dragon punch. I almost said Dragon Ball. Wow.
She has like a weird Tatsumaki that Ken had from Street Fighter 3.
Yeah. You know, she's got those goofy Shoto traits. Now you also have another character that you've been playing with, James, Dauntless, who, in my opinion, resembles like a cross between Terry Bogard and Balrog fighting wise.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. You have your throw character, Talos, who does choke slams and shit out of...
Yeah, it's like a combination of...
And uses magnets to bring people in close. You have another robot called Edge who, you know, plays a lot of... uses a lot of advanced tactics, fireball reflection and absorption, you know, and is actually considered the shell counter.
Yeah.
You have Vlad, who can actually fly and can use awkward angles to attack you.
And he has an unavoidable uppercut if you're too close. Yeah. You can't avoid it.
And then you have Crow, who is supposed to be very mix-up heavy, resembles a ninja.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, these are the six characters they have right now. But the fact that they've put in this much effort and the game looks this good and plays relatively solid, you know, for a technical alpha, I'm very impressed. They've got a ranking system built in with it right now. So much like something like League of Legends, the more you play, the better your rank gets. So yeah. Right now... if you have an arcade stick, it's actually keyboard compatible. That's the default command setting. If you have an arcade stick that is Xbox 360 compatible,
you can use it.
You can use it. If you're using a PS3 or PS4 stick, you're going to be SOL, unfortunately.
Yep.
We learned that the hard way. I tested through several arcade, or at least a couple of arcade sticks and a controller before I figured that out. Luckily, I own a Quanba 4. That has both PS3 and Xbox 360 compatibility, and I just put it on the 360 setting and it worked fine.
Lucky you. But like, yeah. So far, the only problem I had with the game was just like, but again, since this is a technical alpha, it's like a slight problem with some of the I don't know, how much did you get to play it?
I sat down for a few nights and played it. I'll probably go back and end up playing it again today because I really do want to experiment and mess around with it.
Yeah, some of the characters have some weird like invincibility frames. But that has to be expected.
I mean, whatever gripes I'm willing to have that I could have with character balance, I'm willing to throw out the window because, again, it's a technical alpha.
Yeah.
It is literally the first publicly playable build of this game that they have. This isn't even a release that you would call available for mass consumption because you either had to be invited into the game or you had to receive a code from someone who got an alpha invitation, speaking of which, we will get into that at the end of the show.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, I wish there was a way there was, like, more room for active feedback to them. Because, like, funny enough,
they, on their website, risingthunder.com, and I recommend you all go check it out. They do have a forum if you're playing the game. They do have a message board where you can leave information about any bugs or things that are going on right now. Right now, they want a playable game. They want their game to be playable. Yeah. They want the kinks worked out. They want the glitches worked out. They want the random disconnects from a set worked out. And that's the kind of stuff they should be working on right now.
Yeah, which I applaud them for.
Right now, F character balance. You can get to character balance later. You need to make sure your game is working properly. And what they have right now is working reasonably well. But it's not perfect. It does need to be fixed, which is why I say there is a ton of potential for this game. There is a ton of upside for this game, because if this game is going to go for the microtransaction model, similar to stuff like League of Legends or Heroes of the Storm, where if you play it a bunch, you can buy new characters that way, if that's the plan they're going towards. Or, you know, you can do, you know, cash transactions to buy those characters outright. You know, I think that's going to be an interesting thing if they utilize DLC that way. If they're planning on having this game as the what I would call the first free-to-play fighting game, or I don't know if it's the first, but definitely if they're trying to use a free-to-play model for their fighting game and do it in a way that, you know, League of Legends or Heroes of the Storm has, I think they've got something on their hands here.
They really do. It's so unique, in my opinion, with a few exceptions.
I mean, it's not perfect, but it has the capacity to be. And I'm actually... Ladies and gentlemen, if you like the idea behind fighting games, but you've never been able to get into one, I am telling you now, this may be the one you want to hop on. This is the one I think you want to give a chance to.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the easiest to learn. And if you're going to get into competitive stuff, it is. I do like the reward system of it. It rewards you for playing more and learning more. The more you play, the more you win, the more you rank up. And I do see them having the ability for you to buy stuff later on, which is also pretty cool. And I'm just saying,
And for the record, I don't know if that's the route they're going to take. Alpha. I'm guessing here.
Yeah. Even still with the loadouts, we didn't even talk about that.
Yes, right now each character has have certain loadout options for their character's moves. I have my opinions of that, but basically you can change the properties of certain special moves to do certain things. For example, Shell, one of the characters we were talking about, she has a Dragon Punch style move that, in its normal version, it'll knock you into the air and she'll follow up and kick you back down to the ground. And you can use that to actually hit a crouching heavy, basically a sweep, to do additional damage as well if you time it right. Her loadout variant of that is actually a little weaker on the damage side. It gets rid of the knockdown effect when she doesn't go up into the air and kick you back down to the ground. Yeah. She doesn't have the ground or the floor bounce effect on it, but it actually heightens the recovery, or it actually ups her recovery off the Dragon Punch.
Yeah.
So there are options for that as well. You know, and each character has, at least for one move right now, similar options. So I do like the direction they're going with that.
Yeah, on that note, just to ask you a personal thing, have you seen her alley-oop that she can do?
I think so, yeah.
Oh my god.
Oh, I mean, the game is... Nonetheless, I like the game. I think it is very fun, and I think there is a lot of room for potential. I do, within the first hour of it being, or the, not the first hour, the first day of it being released, it actually got a lot of popularity within the FGC because one player absolutely rage quit hard over it. Yeah. But I'm not going to put his name out there, but if you look this up, we'll link a video to it. This guy raged over losing and uninstalled the game and went on a rant and a tangent. It was terrible, and I'm thinking, this is an alpha. This is an alpha. Calm down, guys. This is not worth getting salty over.
Let us also say, the game's only been out for a full day now. Maybe two, technically. Right?
2 days.
2 days.
This
guy rage quit the first day.
People who should not play fighting games 101.
Exactly.
Because of the fact that there's no inputs, which means basically if you want to do a special move, hit a button, all you have to do is just learn how to hit buttons. That's it. You don't have to do the inputs. Just learn how to properly use your buttons. And you could
cool down track.
You could get good at this.
Yeah.
I recommend, if I've ever recommended a fighting game that is worth trying, this is the one I'm going to do. Before we get to the end of our show, we would like to actually briefly touch on a game that was... recommended, not really, it's currently in an alpha stage as well, and we were shown a concept video by a friend of ours by the name of Andrew Prell. His game's Silica Nexus, and you can find this at www.silicanexus.com, that is SilicaNexus. He is basically going for the first virtual reality cross-platform, cross, oh god, cross-platform, cross-medium. It looks like a dogfight simulator, or a basically air combat game. And from what I've seen, the concept of it looks very, very cool. I'm into things like this. I like dogfighting games. I think it. One of my favorite arcade games ever was actually Afterburner. And I thought one of the best arcade pieces I had ever seen was Afterburner Climax with the moving cabinet that would move side to side and back and forth with you. This is a game that I think has the potential to be like that. You could play it on console or in PC or in a virtual reality setup or an arcade setup.
You really can.
But like I said, this is also in an alpha stage. And you know what? If I'd like to have, if possible, I'd like to get Mr. Perel on the show and have him discuss the game with us, because I think he could explain it a lot better than I could.
He better. It's his game.
Yeah, really. Nonetheless, ladies and gentlemen, we have about reached the end of our show.
No, you skipped that. You skipped something. You entirely skipped something. I almost let you slide.
No, I didn't. Actually,
yeah, you did.
We are having a contest, a very brief one. And we're going to give this about a week, because we're going to try and do another podcast recording next week around this time. Here's what we're going to do. Right now, I am sitting on an alpha code for Rising Thunder. Yep. And I really feel that this is a game worth getting behind. So I want someone. Here's the deal. I have a Twitter account at Jesse Uno. What I want you to do is we're going to have a little contest. Tweet me at Jesse Uno stating why G Gundam is the best Gundam series there was. Because G Gundam was the progenitor of giant robot fighting tournament things. And had a robot fighting game.
Yeah.
The person to give me the best reason will get an alpha code that they can redeem over at Rising Thunder to give the game a shot.
Yep. Which that is a very good incentive.
Yes. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Jesse. This is James. This has been the Team Rocket Podcast. And this is us blasting off again. Any final words, James?
Suck so bad.
I know I do. I suck so hard. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, have a good day, and we will see you all next week.
Bye.